Mini-episode 572 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, folks, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. This is the Kyle Ross History of the Royal Rumble Anthology Part 2B 1994.
Featuring Rick Morris.
Featuring
so wait
Rick
a minute
Morris.
Now. If it's the Kyle Ross History of the Royal Rumble, I should be the tiebreaker. Like, I should get two votes to your one.
Well, so you're still disputing Anthony Patrone now being the tie-breaking vote for 93 being the best.
Not
or better than 94.
Not disputing. I'm saying it's wrong and should never be spoken of again.
Your face was truly outstanding when I told you about that. But that's... I want to refer everybody again, as I've been doing, if you want to hear about the overall setup for the Royal Rumbles, go to Part 1A, 1988. If you want to hear about the overall setup for this era, Part 2, go to the one that we did, 2A, 1993. That was where we were spending the majority of time, basically going from, you said it was the beginning to the best, 88 to 92, and that these are the down years, 93 to 97.
Yeah, I think this is a much less creative title than the first one, but neither of them are really, you know.
Very accurate in both cases.
Well, I'd like to think so. So, 1994, the company has continued to descend.
Yes.
Throughout 93, and, oops, as I knocked the table. Hopefully that didn't screw anything up.
Unbelievably, it didn't, at
okay.
least so far.
No technical issues? Okay.
None so
stupid
far.
Big leg. All right. I didn't spill the water either, which is good.
How about that?
Right by both of our laptops.
Yeah.
So, 93 is not a good year for the company.
No.
We talked a lot, actually, about WrestleMania 9 and what they could have done, shoulda, woulda, did happen there in our last part, 2A. We discussed the fallout of the 93 Rumble. And the end result is, of course, Hogan comes back, doesn't want to do the job to Bret, and Yokozuna winds up as champion. He is a horrible champion. Bret Hart gets a raw deal throughout 93, although he has a fine feud with Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
It's a good feud. I mean, it didn't set the world on fire.
Right.
It didn't set the box office on fire, but it's a very good pro wrestling feud.
Right.
And what do... The biggest development of the latter half of 1993 is what? Lex Luger in a bus. We talked about a year ago for the Rumble 93, the narcissist gimmick, or the narcissus,
yep.
as you may,
yes.
as you will. That didn't last long. Vince, desperate to create a new Hulk Hogan. It's funny when you ever try to create a new something, it never works.
That's true.
Steve Austin was not wound up being the new Hulk Hogan in terms of business sense, but they had nothing in common character-wise.
Right.
Just so Vince is clear. I digress. So,
but I digest.
Yes. So Lex Luger was going to be the next Hulk Hogan, is made in the USA Lex Luger.
Right.
It should be noted that when they did it, and he got that mammoth push, they put him in the freaking bus, as much as we make fun of it, he was over short-term. He body slams Yokozuna, and he was over. But they didn't put him over right away at SummerSlam, which from Lex's perspective, they should have. Because when he didn't win against Yokozuna, and again, the grand plan was to stretch it all the way out to WrestleMania here in 94, he lost all the momentum, and he kind of got exposed, which generally happens with Lex Luger. Going back to his NWA days, an angle starts out hot. People are like, yeah, Lex Luger, he should be the next world champion. And then he starts wrestling and he doesn't win, and you're like, okay, I don't want to see Lex Luger champion anymore. Or somebody better comes along, or in this case, you remember somebody's better, and Lex Luger ends up on the short end of the stick. It was Sting in WCW, and it's Bret Hart here.
Let me be a little spineless and note that Lex Luger is a good friend of the show and somebody who's been on, so I don't want to badmouth him. I'm going to say in fairness, well, here's the thing, too, and we talked about this when he was on the show, and it's so funny because he was trained by Hiro Matsuda, and I remarked to him when he was on the show, when he was talking about his philosophies on this, Lex Luger is probably the least political big star in the history of the business. he never lobbied for anything because Hiro Matsuda beat it into his head, you don't do that. And my reaction was, gee, Hiro Matsuda must have, he also trained Hulk Hogan. I guess Hulk Hogan was absent the day that was covered.
That's very good.
But here's the thing.
That's why he wasn't the next Hulk Hogan then. He didn't he attended the class on Do Not Politic.
Yes, yes. Oh. You know, but here's the thing. Like, he rolled with whatever they wanted to do, and when I brought up the whole thing about the face heel changes hurt you and whatever, he said, you know, I always looked at it like, he said, they would come to me whenever there would be a whole, like, Sting got hurt in 90. They needed a main event babyface. He said, I always took pride in my versatility. You could put me in any spot, whatever. So it's interesting. He looked at himself as a mechanic who could fill any role towards the top. We all looked at him with the expectations of the mid to late 80s.
There's
of
that
this
word
guy's
again.
The next thing. Yes. And it's so funny because he would be puzzled to hear us speak of him as a disappointment because I don't think he ever looked at himself through that lens, as strange as that is. Okay. It's really, really interesting.
All right. Well, the bottom line is this. As we move to the Royal Rumble 94.
Yes. It was supposed to be his push.
Lex, the plan was, all along, in the latter half of 93, Yokozuna versus Lex Luger at WrestleMania 10.
Yep.
Lex Luger finally wins the title. But Lex lost the momentum. The old Lex Express ran out of gas.
Yes.
And it's ironic because Brett, I think... We talked about in the last part how Brett's first title run did not work. He would admit that. I think he has admitted that. But I think it took the lousy treatment he got at WrestleMania 9 and then the subsequent work he put forth with Jerry Lawler and the feud with Jerry Lawler for people to realize this guy's pretty good, Bret Hart. This guy's pretty good. And all of a sudden, as we go into this show, you got your two top baby faces are Lex Luger and Bret Hart, and the one the promotion is behind ain't the one the fans are behind.
Right.
Doesn't this sound remarkably like 2015, oh, by the way?
See, I see more of a comparison to 95, but we'll get to that. I see a little bit there. I see where you're going. Well, the one thing about Luger is what they did with him in 94. I mean, when we make jokes about cookie-cutter examples of pushes of an office trying to get behind somebody. What they did with Luger in the summer of 93 makes the Roman Reigns push of 2015 look downright organic by comparison. The red, white, and blue, the bus tour.
But here's
the
thing. Here's the thing, though.
So generic.
It was, and we can make fun of it, but you know what, though?
Yeah.
See, this is why I think it totally compares, and Meltzer just wrote about this. Who knows when the hell anyone's going to be listening to this. You know, it's one of the February 2015 observers, maybe it's the first one in March, I don't know, just go through it if you subscribe to that site, wrote this great piece comparing the Brian Reigns dynamic to Luger Hart here and how McMahon's response was totally different.
Okay.
And say what you will, Luger is the butt of all jokes, but to defend him somewhat here,
yeah.
And look, I was completely a guy who was behind Bret Hart at this point. Luger had way more momentum in 94 than Reigns did in the 2015 Rumble.
Well, and it's funny, too, because the guys at what I would consider to be the greatest ongoing pro wrestling podcast out there, Squared Circle Gazette, I know they're going to be very disappointed with me because there's a lot of Luger hatred on that show. So those guys are probably going, oh, no, Rick Morris, oh, no, when I stick up for Luger. But it's a thing where, again, it's easy to overstate the things you don't like about him, his career, whatever. Bret Hart was the better choice in early 94, but it's not like Luger wasn't over at all. It's not
I think that, and you look, I know you totally disagree, and I don't want to take this, because we'd have to talk about the 94 show.
Yeah.
We don't take this down that road, but Luger certainly had more momentum than Reigns, and personally, I mean, I prefer Bret Hart to Daniel Bryan. Not by a lot, but I do. I think that
I don't, but that's not a ridiculous thing to say in my estimation. We can agree to disagree.
I mean, Bryan could end up being a bigger star, and yeah. I could be wrong there. He isn't now. If Daniel Bryan never wrestled another match, he's not.
I love Bret Hart, but Daniel Bryan is one of my top two or three all time as far as personal favorites. So
okay,
but
so
your thing is reasonable.
Okay, so here's the way I frame. Did I say this already, or did I say it to you when you were coming out of the bathroom and we hadn't turned the microphones on yet? The way I'm framing the 94 Rumble is I contrast the greatness of Bret Hart against the shittiness that was 1994 WWF.
And I get that.
And we've talked about in the WrestleMania anthology, I greatly prefer WrestleMania 10 to you. Like, not to you. It's not that I like WrestleMania 10 more than I like you. I like more WrestleMania 10 more than you like WrestleMania 10.
Way more. Way more.
And WrestleMania 30 is kind of your WrestleMania 10. And I
yes.
guess maybe it's just because now I just don't care as much.
Mm-hmm.
I still had kind of an emotional attachment back in 94 to wrestling. Like, I really cared who went over. And, you know, the tie finish is much maligned here. We need to get into the tie. So what they wind up doing, and we have to backtrack because there's a lot to talk about with Bret that
right.
goes on during this show that's really important. But so you have Bret and so the time rolls around for the show, and all of a sudden Vince is like, okay, maybe I need to go back to Bret Hart, not Lex Luger, for the main event at WrestleMania 10.
Right.
So what they wind up doing is the infamous tie finish. And at the time, everyone hated it, made fun of it. And mm-hmm. years follow. I've softened on it through the years, I'll be honest with you. And the reason is because they did listen to the fans, ultimately. And I like where it went. Unlike 93, where I don't like that Rumble in 93 being tied to the worst WrestleMania ever
yeah.
hurts it in my eyes. I should have said that. I should have closed the show
okay.
at that, but you were busy giving me Anthony Patrone quotes and taking my picture that I freaking forgot. But this being tied to a WrestleMania that I really like, I think does help the show in some regard.
Okay.
And I do not mind the tie finish because it's funny. It was booked like almost like a focus group in the way that it was done where both guys – and it's funny that Luger – you talk about Luger not politicking.
Yeah.
He really wasn't. He kind of seemed resigned at the end of that show. He's like,
yeah.
well, I just got passed by my Bret Hart. And he knew it. And
well, and here's the funny thing,
too. And he had.
Too.
Let's be honest. He had. It was the right choice. And if I have to swallow kind of a goofy tie finish to get to the right place, I will.
Yeah.
And I don't mind the Rumble overall. And I don't hate the finish. It's still a slightly below average Rumble, but slightly below average. It's not a bad Rumble, and I know you disagree completely.
I hated the Rumble. Now Luger, he had something in his book, which is a great book, where he mentioned about Bret Hart. The one main thing that he had to mention in there was that Bret was like, he used to laugh about how like Bret would go to Starbucks, but before you know, I guess they were traveling partners, like, oh, Bret's the guy that got me at Starbucks, we both got Starbucks cards, whatever, and it's all this buddy-buddy, chummy stuff in there. And I said to him during one of our segments on the show, I said, that's amazing, because that guy basically took your spot. You were the two top baby faces, and I don't read anything in your book about
friction
between
you. It was not a Sean Bret situation.
It was not a Sean, and that's where he got into his philosophy on, I just let the office do what they're going to do.
Yeah, and Sean was also a lot different than Lex.
Well, exactly.
Scenes,
but
so.
It's I just think people should know that about Lex, because he deserves credit for that attitude. It was to his detriment professionally. But again, now, do we want to talk about the match before we get to the other stuff, or how do you want? Because it sounds like that's where you want to go.
I did, but then I screwed up.
Okay,
we need to talk about one part of the undercard first because
it sets
the Rumble up.
Yes,
and then we'll go back because you're going to hate on this Rumble, I think, a little too much like I did in '93, in your opinion, probably. And then we'll hate on something that I know we're going to both hate on.
Okay,
we'll do that. How about that?
All right.
Was that on air planning good enough for you?
There you go. Now, you know what? And let's just get this out of the way because it doesn't bear anything. I just have in my notes here, Tatanka Bigelow is hot garbage. We don't need to say much more than
that.
That's what opened the show.
I'll be honest, I did not rewatch it. I lied.
You didn't miss anything.
Okay.
That's
well,
I've
seen
wife.
It once, and it's not memorable. It was supposed to be Tatanka Ludwig Borg originally. I believe it was Tatanka getting his win back from his undefeated streak ending, but Borga got hurt.
I don't know that I ever watched the Tatanka match that I didn't
he
want that
the,
time in my
he
life.
He was one
back.
Of those guys that, remember, they throughout 93, they kept finding like creative ways to protect that unbeaten streak.
Yeah.
And then it finally ended and nobody cared about the
thing
anymore.
Is, too, and I
he would wrestle Shawn for the Intercontinental title and he'd win by DQ. But like when that started happening, people were like, okay, they know what we know. Tatanka's not very good.
If he's going to be like a muscular guy with the tassels, give him a little more of like an Ultimate Warrior type push. I always felt like, you know, try and compensate for his weaknesses that way. I always thought that they didn't.
Tatanka, look, Ultimate Warrior is not the bee's knees, but Tatanka ain't the Ultimate Warrior.
No, exactly.
And the only other match that I think just barely deserves reference is Razor IRS Intercontinental
stupid.
Title match. Well, it's not stupid. It was there to set up the Razor HBK program.
Second ref comes out and narcs on Shawn Michaels, which since when is another referee allowed to come out of the back and
I don't know. You know, we just stop. They do it randomly. I don't know. They do it
randomly.
Randomly. Well, it's fine. To me, this setup, one of the greatest matches in company history.
Monsoon and JR calling that match, by the way. I don't know why.
We should say Ted DiBiase, who we'll talk about, I'm sure, randomly during this podcast.
The one I preferred, by the way, had Monsoon and the Brain calling it. So just remember that.
That's true, but I mean, I'm just talking about the Rumble itself, not the announced.
Announcing can add or detract from it.
It can to a degree, but only to a degree.
Okay.
We with the JR Monsoon announced team here, they were radio. This is what they had, radio WWF, which I don't know how you could even get that. But they were also paying JR a salary, so they had to justify it by giving him a match. Whatever, that match is nothing. All right, so let's talk about the tag title match, though, because I like it. And it becomes important for the whole show.
Right.
This is when you had the big Owen Hart heel turn
on
this show, which is outstanding. And you could see, in retrospect, you could see coming a mile away. And you could kind of see coming even at the time. I remember as a 13-year-old kid, it was very obvious what they were going to do here. They challenged the Quebecers. The Quebecers, the buildup, again, when you watch this video package, it was one of those things where it's so well set up. You know, they had their falling out of Survivor Series. You know, over the holidays we made up. And now I'm going to take my little brother Owen and we're going to challenge for the tag team titles against the Quebecers. Then the Quebecers lose to 1-2-3 Kid and Jannetty in what's a pretty kind of a sleeper match on Raw in early 94. And Owen's all dejected because he's not going to get... It was weird. They never changed it to a 1-2-3 Kid and Jannetty as the champions. It was just always going to be Brett and Owen versus the Quebecers. But Quebecers win it back, and you get the square one. You get this Quebecers-Brett Owen match, if you follow. That's probably a lot of time spent in this undercard match, building up this undercard match. But anyway.
No, but that's the build that we needed, though.
And I like it, and I liked it. And as the match goes on, you know, Brett hurts. And I thought, as much as DiBiase sucked on this show in general, I thought he was kind of good here in taking – in, you know, sort of foreshadowing Owen's heel turn.
Here's the thing.
I did think he was okay, and the heel turn worked very well and drew a lot of heat. Owen cuts a terrible promo afterwards, bless his soul. But
I kicked your leg out from under your leg.
Yes. But I thought that this – the Quebecers, by the way, as dirty, sneaky heels, I thought were great in this. I really liked this match, and I loved the angle. And, again, stuff with Bret Hart on the show, great. Other stuff, not so much.
You know, I have some criticisms of the way they handled stuff with Bret and Owen earlier in the year. I will say the build-up to this, the execution of it, that point – you talk about DiBiase being effective in that role. I'm going to say effective in the body role because, and this is very high praise indeed, the way that they handled the split, wasn't it reminiscent of the Mega Powers Explode?
It kind of was where they kept saying, oh, Brett's being, you know, why won't Brett tag Owen? And, you know, it worked. Look, it's funny now that we've seen, you know, we've seen Hardy Boy feuds flop a couple times through the years in different promotions. You know, the Rhodes brothers currently, that feud is not working very well as we head into WrestleMania 31. It's really hard to do a brother versus brother feud.
Yes.
And Brett and Owen pulled it off. And a lot of it early on especially was due to Brett. Because, you know, Owen was a JTTS still at this point. But with this angle, because it was so shocking to see. Because, you know, everyone knew they were brothers. I mean, it wasn't like it was kind of like a fake brother thing. Everyone bought it. It was so shocking still to see, even after all the build made it kind of obvious. And then obviously going into WrestleMania, you know, I've never seen one guy take a you know, the guy he's feuding with and turn him from a JTTS into a main event star like that, and it's owed completely to the dynamic of them being brothers. And I know you don't think that it was executed as well as I
do.
But
because I think Brett got some JTTS stink on him from Owen. My qualm is, and here's the thing too, for my and I know that Brett's very proud of this feud, and Brett,
as
I think,
he should be.
I think his and here's the thing too. If we're fortunate enough to get him on the show again, we've had him on, I believe, three times now. If we're fortunate enough for there to be a fourth time, I'm going to mention my criticism to him, and I'm predicting this. I'm predicting when he first hears that I'm critical, he's not going to understand why, and probably by the time I'm done explaining it, he's probably going to say, yeah, I wish they'd have done that. I think Owen should have been stronger going into WrestleMania 10. I think he needed a big win or two under his belt because he devalued Brett by beating him. He just did. It's a thing here of where...
I didn't see that.
You know, well, here's the thing. Again, comparisons were always going to be there. This whole thing of Bret Hart taking the torch for the new generation, Hulk Hogan wouldn't have done he wouldn't have done a tainted job for a JTTS. Granted, I know the Genius beat him on Saturday Night Main Event, not by pinfall.
Yes,
that was like my count-out.
Yes.
So, yeah, you thought you had me there, but...
Damn it.
What the interesting thing is philosophically, and this is the period of time with the steroid trial, and Vince had ceded a lot of the booking power to Jerry Jarrett, and they were booking more of the Memphis territorial week-to-week kind of a style in the promotion here. And this is stuff that, again, I liked some of the approaches of it, even if I thought that the characters at the time were horrible and whatever. But it made the promotion feel more small time. You're booking it like you're booking for a Memphis studio show week to week. And I'm critical of that. I'm critical that they diminished the product from what it had been in the 80s. They made it seem smaller at a time when they didn't have star power. They fed into it. I feel like it was a downward spiral. Everything they did conspired to make it feel smaller. I will never have affection for 94, for the Rumble, for the year, whatever, because everything felt so small and crappy.
I just like, and we'll go to the, let's go to the Rumble now.
Yeah.
I just loved the reascension of Bret Hart to the title picture. Let's talk about how we get there. So the way that tag match ends,
yes,
is they stop the match because Bret can't continue, and Owen is livid that he never made the tag to him, and that's
right,
when he kicks his leg out of his leg,
yeah,
and does the big heel turn. So the way it's presented is, remember, Bret and Owen were also both going to be in the Rumble match. This
right.
is also the first year that we see undercard guys in the Rumble,
right?
Which talked about the. 97
got heavy with that.
Yes. But this is the first year we started to see it a little bit. Now, in this case, it was fine with Bret and Owen. Tatanka Bigelow was kind of needless. You wonder why they even wrestled one-on-one. But
had to fill time.
Yeah. But, you know, with Bret and Owen, so the big thing was, and see, I really liked this storyline, and maybe you just didn't attach on as much.
Mm-hmm.
Will Bret be able to come out for the Rumble? There was this doubt of, can he do it? And then... keep in mind, they had the other big babyface, Luger. They had him get jumped before the Rumble by Mr. Fuji's contingent.
Yes.
And they had him with doubt.
Tenryu
so
and Kabuki, I believe.
Yes. I thought that they did a good job putting heat on the two top babyfaces.
They did.
And knowing already, and here's my thing. I already know the rating, and I assume you should too because you just watched it. I know the rating I give to the 2015 Rumble.
Okay.
This is a better Royal Rumble than the 2015 Rumble. If you disagree with that, I think you're completely, completely off the deep end. If you think this 2015 the Rumble is better than this, I think you're insane.
I didn't like 2015, but I haven't rated it yet, but I doubt that I go as low as I do for this one.
That is insane.
1.25 stars for the 94 Rumble.
That is insane. This is such better because they did such a better job at getting heat on the two main players,
and
as opposed to 2015, where one guy didn't have as much heat as either guy in this, that being Roman Reigns, and Daniel Bryan was just taken out of the equation early. This smokes last year. That's, to me, why I'm more confident in my rating. This smokes the 2015 Rumble. I give it 2.75, putting it in the average range, and it's the best Rumble this era. Plus,
more than twice what I gave it.
Plus... this is another bone of contention we're going to have with this.
Okay.
Let's get the early part of the match. The diesel push. You talk about the new elements being added to the Rumble.
Yes.
Through this period, you talk about this being what do you call this era of the Rumble?
It just
like it's going through puberty.
Yeah.
So this is the first time we saw
right.
that you could take a guy who maybe had little to no momentum, which Diesel was actually on the verge of being fired going out of the show. He had been Sean had left in the fall of '93, leaving Nash with nothing to do.
He was exposed in those matches with Hennig.
Yeah, and Hennig wasn't trying either.
Yeah. Hennig and Michaels always seemed to have a lot of heat over stuff.
Yeah, that match sucked at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Didn't suck, it just wasn't great, which was the problem. Expectations.
Right.
So, as one last-ditch effort, they came up with this idea that Diesel would come in and just start tossing people. And I know you have a problem with it. You have a problem with some of the guys he tossed and that there wasn't a lot of star power here.
Yeah.
And I do agree that the star power here had certainly nosedived. But here's where it goes again, where you have to sometimes look off the page.
Okay.
Is the metaphor. It worked, and that's all that mattered. There's a reason that this gimmick is called the Diesel Push.
It worked because he went on to become the greatest drawing WWF.
No!
Oh, wait a minute. He didn't. He was the worst drawing WWF champion in history.
Okay, but he still became a champion, which still matters. It's more than... It was much more over than Bray Wyatt.
As we're seeing with Vince and Roman Reigns in 2015, when Vince gets an idea in his head.
Here's the thing. I compare Reigns of 2014 to Diesel here, not 2015. Because Reigns was over in the... And I'm going to call you on it, too, when we do
sure
it.
He was in 2014,
he was over doing a similar thing.
Although, at the end, he was over for being the anti-Batista.
True.
And you must admit
Diesel,
that.
It was way harder in this era as a no-momentum heel to get people chanting your name. This worked. And if you disagree with that,
well,
you're just wrong.
And I didn't even come to this take until very recently, but
there have been more recent Diesel pushes.
Yeah.
None of them have been as effective as this one. Rikishi in 2000. Look, I've watched mostly, so I'm going to run
okay.
through them if you haven't. Rikishi in 2000 was nice.
Okay.
Look, he's not Diesel. And Bray Wyatt this past year, also not as effective as
well,
this one.
Well, it's a thing.
And you can make all the excuses you want, but this one was the effective
one. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And he was just the one-eyed man because he threw out fellow jobbers at this point. I'm not going to say he was a jobber.
But it worked.
But here's the thing. He wasn't in there in 1990 throwing out Akeem and the Big Boss Man and Ted DiBiase. That would have gotten somebody over. He's out there in 94, and
he
I don't remember who
over,
he threw
though.
Out
he was
specifically.
Super over in 94.
The guys that they had out there, and I don't remember how many of these are ones that he threw out. But Quang. The Smoking Guns, Adam Bomb, Jeff Jarrett, Men on a Mission, Adam Bomb.
You said Adam Bomb twice. He threw out your boy Bob Backlund that you praised so much in 93. Bob Backlund got the treatment here that he deserved in 93.
Bob Backlund, I think, was underutilized in 93 because they didn't have a whole lot else. They should have gone with him for a little more. But these are not necessarily guys he threw out. But these are the poster children of the new generation.
It is a week.
The new generation is the worst crop ever, bar none. And I've gone back and forth about this. Like, I don't know why, because like guys like Adam Bomb, not a bad worker. You know, especially for a man of his size.
It was the era of silly gimmicks, though,
Quang,
is the problem.
Quang was better as Quang than he was as Savio Vega by a long shot, but wasn't over at all. Here's the thing, though. You had goofy stuff in the previous generation. Honky Tonk Man, Hakim, the Big Boss Man. How come that crap worked and this stuff didn't? That's what I don't know. But see, Vince's hubris. I think when Vince got over Hakim, the African Dream, that's what paved the way for the worst of the new generation.
No, he did. He thought I can
get over everybody. You know, garbage man by day, wrestler by night.
Yeah, there was a lot. And look, there was a lot of trash in this, but I thought, like, to me, compared to 93, where the second half I was falling asleep.
Yeah.
There weren't many slow points in this, and that's the key to a Rumble. There weren't many. Diesel is the story in the first half, and it was that look. He went from a guy who wasn't like, all right, Diesel failed when it went from being over to drawing money. He failed that part.
Yeah.
But he absolutely, in this match, went from not being over a lick to being over, and he was over throughout 94.
And
he was.
And granted.
And that's the sign that this worked. I don't care if he threw out Virgil. It worked.
Well, and granted, and I'm not saying that he wasn't over in 95 due to the failure of the... I'm not calling the Diesel push a failure. I'm just saying I think it's overstated. Diesel was not over in 95 in equal part because he sucked as a worker.
He was
and
over.
He, had the worst
he was
crop.
Over. He just didn't draw money.
He had the worst crop of heels, quote-unquote main event heels to work with anybody ever did. So part of it was he sucked as a worker. Part of it was the heels. But, well, you know, you talk about the latter part of the match, the excitement there. Yeah, when you got Make a Difference Fatu in as one of the final four with Michaels, Hart, and Luger, he was one of the final four, I believe.
I actually put a note why was Fatu in there, and he wasn't making a difference yet. He was part of the Head Shrinkers.
Oh, that's even better. That's even better.
He's got a hard head.
Somebody is part of an undercard tag team is one of your final four.
Okay.
The star power of 94, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll remember that 99 when Billy Gunn's in the final four.
Billy Gunn and the you can't even compare that. The Outlaws were over. Way over.
Yeah, that's true, but Billy Gunn was still a nothing.
Although you're going to tell me it was just a catchphrase and they weren't over. You're going to tell
me they were over, but it was cuz the catchphrase.
Oh, thank you. Thank you cuz Daniel Bryan is just a catchphrase to you.
He's with some good work. He hasn't drawn any money yet. But here's the thing. I liked when Randy Savage comes out. Let's go back to the beginning here.
Okay.
What a great segment. I still say when somebody I haven't seen in a while walks into a bar,
I still
paraphrase Vince McMahon and say, one of the all-time great competitors. I love that part of that. I like that. That's when the Diesel push slows down. Michaels is in this thing for a while, and I like that. I like
Michaels, Bigelow, and Crush were the longest.
There was kind of this weird portion in this. The only portion that I thought kind of dragged a little bit, there was this weird portion where the heels dominated.
Yeah.
Like Diesel was in, and then Crush and Bigelow came in.
Yeah.
And they just were like, I like how Doink had a real cup of coffee in this. That's always welcome.
The Steiners were in and out early. That didn't mean a whole lot.
No, they were on
really
their way out anyway.
Cooled off.
But this Rumble just didn't drag for me. The only thing that I do
Well, 90-second intervals instead of 2 minutes, so they cheated a little.
Dude, but you know what? That did. I mean, look, we'll go, the interval thing, let's save that for next year.
Okay, let's save that for 95.
I do literally have in my notes, I can show you, Fatu in Final Four? Question mark?
Yeah.
You're right, that was bad.
Great minds think alike.
Here's the thing. You know what I like, though?
What?
The Final Two. This is what you should have done. Even if Reigns was going to go over in 2015 and bring it back to that, you have it come down to the two faces with heat on them. This
True.
Was booked properly to the end. And, again, believe it or not, I think the tie, because of the creative way that they booked WrestleMania 10, which I like and I know you don't as much, but was better than just Brett going over. If you put all that heat on the two baby faces,
mm-hmm.
for God's sake, have it come down to those two, and it got the crowd going. The only thing that was weird is it seemed like half the field was still in when number 30 came in. That's weird. You almost never see that.
Well,
but I thought that compared to 93, where it's just like, all right, Yokozuna's won this thing, let's just let everyone get out of there, there was legitimate drama when it came down to Brett and Luger, and 1993 or 94, give it to me.
I guess you felt like Yoko was more of a foregone conclusion. I guess I just didn't see that as much at the time.
Who did you think was going to win?
I wasn't really thinking through the WrestleMania matchup. I wasn't at the time. I wasn't used to thinking of it in terms of who's going to be in the WrestleMania main event.
Funny story. I know. I always say I like Brett. Maybe that's a little retroactive analysis to make myself look smarter. I remember when this pay per view took place originally. My brother and I were getting ready to watch it, and I bet him $1. That like I always like to bully my brother. I'm like, let's bet on who's going to win this. I'll bet you $1. And I'm like, I'll take Lex Luger because my business. It's like he's obviously going to win. And he was like, well, my poor brother. He's like, I guess I'll just take Bret Hart then. Neither had to pay.
Very interesting.
What do you think about that story?
That is a funny story because again, how many times
the
does
only other time.
the coin toss? How many times does the coin land on its side, as it did there? Apparently, you know. But this is one of these things. I will say this in terms of Brett being over.
One of two Royal Rumble bets I ever made in my life.
It did the other one go better?
It did. You know why? Because Chad Repeck, Bob Sacramento, the show had Bret Hart in 97. I had Steve Austin.
Oh,
he was livid. Didn't want to pay.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can
didn't want to pay.
I can understand that. I'll say this, and this is something that. This is something you hadn't mentioned. The only thing you hadn't mentioned about the build with Brett and Owen, and what I think made, again, for as much as I criticize, for as much as I think they could have done more to build Brett and Owen going into WrestleMania, given the way it went, the way that they did it, to show you how organically over Bret Hart was, you didn't bring this up about the video packages and everything like that leading up to the match, that with him taking the tag match with Owen for the titles, they played it up as you're putting aside your singles career.
Yes.
You're sacrificing
yes.
it for the sake of your brother. So there was not the focus going into Rumble of Bret Hart, Lex Luger. It organically came down to
yes.
that, but nobody was conditioned at the time
That's
to think
why,
Bret Hart.
It was so much. This is so much better than the 2015 Rumble. And I cannot stress enough. I know I'm coming across as maybe a bit of a Bret Hart mark here.
Okay.
It was so great when he came out. So he did the spot. We didn't talk about this, where somebody didn't come out, and I forgot who it was.
Bastion Booger.
Okay, I can't remember if it was him or if it was Kamala that didn't
yeah.
come out. I knew it was some fat
I
know
that, yeah.
Okay. And Vince, you know, we'll talk about Vince's announcing as we go through these years here.
Yeah.
Vince is not Jim Ross, but Vince can be effective in a different way.
Yes.
And he was effective here.
He was.
With you know, as Teddy Biasi and spent 60 minutes putting over, you know, everybody's got a price. It's like, dude, shut up, Ted. you know, you did okay in the tag match, but the longer the show went on, he stunk. But when Vince is like, that had to be Bret Hart.
Yep.
And then, like a couple guys later, it's another bit of a – what a great job Bret does at selling the knee. When he – that's the thing.
Yeah.
There is nothing in 93 to compare to Bret coming out when he comes out, when he answers the bell and comes out with his number selling the knee. It is just wrestling 101 par excellence.
I just don't
Bret Hart, I tip my cap to you. One of the finest of all time.
I just don't think he can salvage a match with 25 jobbers in it.
Most Rumbles we've come accustomed to, and look, this one, the bad was as bad as it got. I'll give you that. Quang, you know, what's 300
yeah.
pounds of shit hitting the fan? Quang! you know, and, you know, Vince McMahon, bless his soul, I think, like, this was Sparky Plug's debut. He's like, what if Sparky Plug goes to WrestleMania? As the years went by, it got really bad when he was doing that, like
right.
in, like, the 95s and the 96s. But, I didn't think the star – it was as bad as it got. And I thought it was weaker in 95, 96, and 97 than it was here.
Well, I thought this was pretty bad. But here's the thing. A couple old war horses were out there late, Martel and Valentine, a couple holdovers from the old days. Rick Martel, I think, was even in the 95 and 96 one. He must have literally just come out once a year because I have no memory of him post Razor Ramon feud in 93.
He
hilarious.
Must have still been hanging around in this point. Yeah, I think he was still hanging around
this
in 94.
This must have been like once a year, but I mean,
95, he hadn't been around, yeah.
And
but.
Then 96, but in 96 in particular, I'm like, you got to be kidding
me. He was in 96?
I think he was in 96.
I don't think he was. I just watched it. Are you sure? I think you're out of line.
I'm looking through my notes here, but anyways.
But anyway, I just thought that this, I thought it was based on, like, okay, when you look at, like, 96 and 97, you see guys that became some guys that became stars, but they weren't at the time. I thought that the Bret Luger dynamic,
yeah,
and this is, I guess, where we disagree, is enough to carry this Rumble to respectable status.
I think I was wrong about Martel. I don't think he was in a 96. That's the thing too, that when you look at that. And by the way, the finish here, and I noted this, and you know, one very very sad thing, one very funny thing. The sad thing is, this is one of the last times at a big event that we saw Joey Morella on camera. He would perish in an auto accident that summer. He raises Lex Luger's hand at the end, which means, do you know who was raising Bret Hart's hand?
Earl Hebner. No. Bret screwed Bret.
Foreshadowing, ladies and gentlemen. Jack Tunney comes out for his Bud Selig at the All-Star Game moment to pronounce a tie, which...
I did like how we got the... I believe this was the last time we ever heard the old school WrestleMania theme song. Remember, because like they didn't know what to do, so they just played the wrestle. It's like do 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 do.
That's right.
Do.
I thought it was do 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 do. Wasn't it like that? I thought.
No, I think
okay.
my do's were better. but they went to the new one for WrestleMania 10. It was like
okay.
It was like. Doo.
Well, and here's the thing too, and I made a note about this because something revolutionary would happen about 2 months later in ECW that would shape the way that things would go for the for all time here.
Three-way dances?
Three. Yeah. So that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank
you
for usurping my point. Well, my point was that, like, today, wouldn't we get that at WrestleMania today if it was
oh,
that
yeah.
finish?
But you know what?
Yeah.
You know what?
What?
The way they did it was so much better. because it, because Yokozuna and Luger had the personal program. Brett had kind of forced his way in.
Right. But here's a funny thing. Three-way dance, that would have delayed the start of the Brett Owen feud. With today's dynamic.
And that's why it was better, because you had the way they did it here was so much. That's another reason that I like this better than 2015.
Okay.
Although 2015, I like, they did do it with Daniel Bryan having to wrestle his way into it and being the first and last.
I obviously like the booking of this better than 2015, which that's not saying much. The overall match, the star power of 2015, whatever.
I don't think there's a lot of star power in 2015. There's a lot of guys that you look at and say, yeah, they could be doing better, but I don't think there's a lot of star power.
I don't mean... Well, repressed star power, I guess I would call
fantasy,
it.
Fantasy,
held back
a
star
lot of
power.
Guys, that would be over a lot more if you were booked, if you had the
pretty
pencil,
much.
Right, Ricky?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly.
We need to rip on something.
Yes.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this. So,
are we hooking back around to the world title?
Let's do that.
Okay.
So, at the time, we haven't touched. It's funny because I've just blocked this out of my mind, and I have not watched this match in many, many years, deliberately.
Nobody ever should under any circumstances.
This show was panned pretty badly at the time, which I know makes you smile.
I mean, I think,
but the reason it was panned was not because of the Rumble. It was because of what took place because of the Rumble. We have interestingly not referenced the world title yet in this podcast.
Yep.
And so they needed something for Yokozuna to do that was kind of interesting while they sort of like Luger took the long way. You know, he took the scenic route to his supposed title shot that never really came. So they put him in there with the Undertaker. This started at Survivor Series.
Who knew he was a Patriot? He had an American flag under his trench coat.
I liked that. I remember. I kind of popped when that happened secretly. And they did this, thing where they built to this casket match for weeks and weeks. He was building this huge. It's goofy. He had done it before with Kamala, and it's goofy. And this was the goofy period of the Undertaker. Kind of coinciding with, the goofy period.
I think
in
it was done better, quite frankly, with Butcher Vachon in the old AWA days, but that's just me.
Yeah, that is just you.
Or Mad Dog Vachon.
Yeah. So I even remember when I was 13 going in, I'm like, all right, well, Undertaker's not going to go over here, but it's a casket match. How are they going to find a way for him to lose?
Props to you, because when I was 13, I was not thinking in terms of who's going to go over.
Oh, I remember, it's funny.
You were a sheet reader even as a kid.
No, I wasn't a sheet reader. I remember when I found out, that what I was watching was predetermined when I was, 8 years old. And I remember it not mattering at all. I then immediately became obsessed with where they were going. I've always been obsessed with booking in wrestling. And I remember, all right, how are they going to do this? And they had a way, and I get that you have to protect the Undertaker, because especially back then, and we'll talk, we're going to talk about protecting the Undertaker, at least I will, when we get to 96, in another world title match he's in. But this sucks so bad. The Undertaker-Yokozuna casket match is probably one of the worst matches in company history.
They so thoroughly killed the gimmick of a casket match that to resuscitate it by doing a rematch at Survivor Series, they had to bring in Chuck friggin' Norris.
And it didn't help.
Yeah, to guard against any interference.
And we talked about this, especially. So what they do, the way they finish it is you have Yoko and he's afraid of cast. They have like 8 heels running. Some random.
Total.
Ones too.
A lot of randos in there. Jeff Jarrett?
Well, they had Cross Shoe was affiliated with Fuji, and they had, Tenryu and Kabuki.
They made sense.
But you had to have a ton of guys. It was ridiculous. They basically emptied the heel locker room. And yep. they presented all they were paid off by Fuji and Cornette. And Yokozuna wins. Had it stopped there, it wouldn't have been good. But I could have just been like, all right, it was just a bullshit finish.
Yeah.
The Undertaker dying and ascending to heaven portion of the program. By the way, Marty Jannetty.
Yes.
Which is why he got such a late number in the Rumble, because he played the role of the Undertaker that ascended up top. I should point out Michaels Jannetty had a nice spot, by the way, in the Rumble that I enjoyed.
Okay.
If I didn't, I liked that.
I didn't catch that.
Well, you should have.
I probably should have.
But is so goofy, the fallout of this title match. It sucks. It's so embarrassing. When people talk about like the embarrassing, like being embarrassed to be a wrestling fan, this is something I always remember.
There are a few things, and again, you know, like I'm angry about the booking of Daniel Bryan in 2015. There are things that make me angry. Nothing makes me want to rip a promoter's throat out, though, that like you're having to make me embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. That's the cardinal sin. There is no greater thou shalt not, in my estimation, than causing any of us shame, because we get enough of it just for watching what happens in the ring. These angles. I mean, my BFF is a proud, dedicated, non-wrestling fan lifetime who loves to rag on me for stuff. When I think to myself, oh, my God, thank God my BFF didn't see this, because I'd be hearing about it until the end of time. Nothing makes me resent it more than that. I think I'd rather watch the post-match celebration at WrestleMania 20 again before I watch this, Kyle Ross. The look on your face right now is very disturbed.
You know what you just said? I mean, neither's very comfortable, and but I was
making a point.
Yes, point taken. So Undertaker Yokozuna is a disaster. And, you know, it's funny. Undertaker, you talk about the streak. This is one of two WrestleManias that he would then miss, WrestleMania 10. And because the angle, he's selling it. He took time off for his family or whatever.
Well, here's the thing. He took time off. He came back for the Faker Taker match at SummerSlam. This is a bone that I have.
I thought
to
it was under Faker.
Under Faker as well. This is another bone that to pick that I have. We'll see if you think I'm being Nelson nitpicker about this. If you do,
you
I don't think it's justified. Well, who do you have on commentary for the match? Ted DiBiase, the man who discovered The Undertaker and would make that the centerpiece of the Faker-Taker storyline over the summer. Why is there not even one tidbit in here about Undertaker? Vince, I discovered this guy.
Why do you not thought of it yet? I don't know.
You knew he was going to be out. You knew you were probably doing Faker-Taker.
Did they? I don't know. It was 8 months. I mean, they were much better, obviously, back then at doing the long-term booking.
Yeah.
And 8 months back then was not, clue.
Vince used to go WrestleMania to WrestleMania.
I think that had stopped by this point.
But
I don't know. I guess I cannot confirm. And if they had decided they were doing the under Faker gimmick, I don't know if they knew that they were going to have
Ted
DiBiase. I'm guessing they just didn't know.
Okay. If they knew that they were, it's a big oversight. Because a guy who's going to be at the center of The Undertaker's next storyline until he gets the Ryoko rematch, you know, and you got him right there on commentary, which he shouldn't have been.
No, he was bad.
You know. So, again.
I don't think he ever did it again, did he?
I can't remember.
This was a one-shot.
By the way, when we're criticizing the era, there in a kayfabe sense or a just entertainment sense, there's never been a worse top stable than the Million Dollar Corporation.
Agreed.
He was the heir.
That was the word.
He was basically positioned as the next Bobby Heenan. He had the most important stable of all the stables ongoing in the company.
But it was a weak stable. And
none of them ever held a title, by the way. Never held a title in 2+ years.
They chased Diesel for a little bit when Sid came aboard, but...
Yeah, unsuccessfully.
Bad. It was bad.
And again, a horrible, horrible stable.
Bad.
But indicative of a down period, at least you're not sticking up for the undercard. But you and I, again, we have what will probably be our biggest point of difference.
What did we differ on 90? 90,
I
have 3.5 on 90.
Oh, 3.5. I don't have my notes in front of me.
You had 2.25, right?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
That's, 2.25?
Well, since I'm on the spot, I'll call that up
here. Let's see what we had, because you had 1.25 and I have 2.75. So that's a 1.5 star difference.
It is.
Which isn't that huge. Well, I guess it kind of is.
It's like double,
We have a 1-star difference in... but I'm doubling nothing almost.
Well,
and it was a 1-star difference in 93. So we've got, it's funny. I'm glad we got this out.
All right. What year are you asking about? 90?
90.
I said 2.25. You're right.
3.5 I had. So right. It's almost as much.
I rated this a full star below 1990. That's how bad I thought this was.
I almost rated this a full star below 1990.
Well,
but I just, I like the Royal Rumble better.
And that's what's interesting about this is that
I'm interested to see when we get to the more modern Rumbles. I'm guessing you're going to be more generous than I am.
Well, my
or maybe
as a rule, my baseline is always lower because I'm not. Listen, I'm not so jaded that I'm always like, well, if you've seen one Rumble, you've seen them all. But
I just think it's a very, one of the most effective gimmick matches ever created.
Yeah, there's a lot of tropes in there. There's a lot of things that you see now every time out. There's a lot of guys in there where you're just yawning through, waiting for the next guy to come out. So that explains a lot of this. Nothing explains you and I being so diametrically opposed on 93 and 94. That is
two Rumbles that no one really cares about, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
And we spent a lot of time talking about two Rumbles that nobody cares about. But we will continue this descent into madness in the rest of part two, and I think we're going to agree more on the other three Rumbles we have to talk about.
Well, the next one, I think, is the worst that I have seen to date, and it sounds like you may agree.
It is not only to date, it wasn't only the worst to date in 1995, I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
It's the worst today I've ever seen in 2015, so people have that to look forward to.
Exactly. Stick around for the next one, folks. Tune in again. When, God help us, 1995 will be next.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.